It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Today they had the Kobe Bryant Memorial at Staples Center. They made it during the day today, even though there's Clippers game tonight. They wanted to make it on this date because of the perfection with the numbers with 2-24-20. 2 was Gianna's number. 24 was Kobe's number. Kobe had played with the Lakers for 20 years. So there were lots of dates they were thinking about doing it. And even though there was a game today, they said, let's do it during the day. And there were some fantastic speeches and tributes. Vanessa Bryant, by the way, spoke. And a lot of people weren't sure if she would show up. She was there, and she spoke. And it was crazy emotional. Jimmy Kimmel gave a really, really good speech. But not everyone knew. We were even wondering, would Michael be there? Would Michael pay his respects there? And not only was he there, but we asked him to speak at the All-Star game, and maybe he did not do that because he had planned to do this. And he does not speak publicly often anymore, even though he's an owner, even though he's the GOAT. Michael doesn't stand up, and he especially doesn't let anyone see him vulnerable. Today, he stood up and he spoke about his relationship with Kobe Bryant.
I'm grateful to Vanessa and the Bryant family for the opportunity to speak today. I'm grateful to be here to honor Gigi and celebrate the gift that Kobe gave us all. What he accomplished as a basketball player, as a businessman and a storyteller, and as a father. In the game of basketball, in life, as a parent, Kobe left nothing in the tank. He left it all on the floor. Maybe it surprised people that Kobe and I were very close friends. But we were very close friends. Kobe was my dear friend. He was like a little brother. Everyone always wanted to talk about the comparisons between he and I. I just wanted to talk about Kobe. You know, all of us have brothers and sisters, little brothers, little sisters who, for whatever reason, always tend to get in your stuff, your closet, your shoes, everything. It was a nuisance, if I can say that word. But that nuisance turned into love over a period of time, just because the admiration that they had for you as big brothers or big sisters. The questions, they're wanting to know every little detail about life that they were about to embark on. He used to call me, text me, 11:30, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Talking about post-up moves, footwork, and sometimes the triangle. At first, it was an aggravation. But then it turned into a certain passion. This kid had passion like you would never know. And it's an amazing thing about passion. If you love something, if you have a strong passion for something, you would go to the extreme to try to understand or try to get it. Either ice cream, Cokes, hamburgers, whatever you have a love for. If you have to walk, you will go get it. If you have to beg someone, you will go get it. What Kobe Bryant was to me was the inspiration that someone truly cared about the way I played the game or the way that he wanted to play the game. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. To do that, you had to put up with the aggravation, the late night calls, or the dumb questions. I took great pride as I got to know Kobe Bryant that he was just trying to be a better person, a better basketball player. We talked about business. We talked about family. We talked about everything. And he was just trying to be a better person. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me. I'm pretty sure Vanessa and his friends all can say the same thing. He knows how to get to you in a way that affects you personally, even though if he's being a pain in the ass. But you ever have a sense of love for him and the way that he can bring out the best in you. And he did that for me. I remember maybe a couple of months ago, he sends me a text. And he's saying, I'm trying to teach my daughter some moves. And I don't know what I was thinking or what I was working on. But what were you thinking about when you were trying to work on your moves? I said, what age? He says, 12. I said, 12, I was trying to play baseball. He sends me a text back saying, and this is at 2 o'clock in the morning. But the thing about him was we could talk about anything that related to basketball, but we can talk about anything that related to life. And we, as we grow up in life, rarely have friends that we can have conversations like that. Well, it's even rare when you can grow up against adversaries and have conversations like that. I went and saw Phil Jackson in 1999 or maybe 2000. I don't know when Phil was here in L.A. And I walk in and Kobe's sitting there. And the first thing, I'm in a suit. First thing Kobe said, did you bring your shoes? No, I wasn't thinking about playing. But his attitude to compete and play against someone he felt like he could enhance and improve his game with. To me, that's what I loved about the kid. Absolutely loved about the kid. No matter where he saw me, it was a challenge. And I admired him because his passion, you rarely see someone who's looking and trying to improve each and every day, not just in sports, but as a parent, as a husband. I am inspired by what he's done and what he shared with Vanessa and what he's shared with his kids. I have a daughter who's 30, I became a grandparent. And I have two twins. I have twins at 6. I can't wait to get home to become a girl dad. and to hug them and to see the love that they, and the smiles that they bring to us as parents. He taught me that just by looking at this tonight, looking at how he responded and reacted with the people they actually loved. These are the things that we will continue to learn from Kobe Bryant. To Vanessa, Natalia, Bianca, Capri, my wife and I will keep you close in our hearts and our prayers. We will always be here for you, always. I also want to offer our condolences and support to all the families affected by this enormous tragedy. Kobe gave every last ounce of himself to whatever he was doing. After basketball, he showed a creative side to himself that I didn't think any of us knew he had. In retirement, he seemed so happy. He found new passions, and he continued to give back as a coach in his community. More importantly, he was an amazing dad, amazing husband, who dedicated himself to his family and who loved his daughters with all his heart. Kobe never left anything on the court. And I think that's what he would want for us to do. No one knows how much time we have. That's why we must live in the moment. We must enjoy the moment. We must reach and see and spend as much time as we can with our families and friends and the people that we absolutely love. To live in the moment means to enjoy each and every one that we come in contact with. When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died. Or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
Just an outstanding speech today at Staples Center from Michael Jordan.
Well done. We all wondered whether or not he was going to be part of the All-Star festivities. Personally, if you were going to choose one or the other, I'm glad he chose today as opposed
today
to the
All-Star. Today was perfect,
game.
Right. Absolutely. I just was wondering if he would do something at Chicago, and if he didn't, would that mean that the time had passed? But he chose to speak when the spotlight was the brightest at Kobe's memorial today at Staples Center. And I thought he gave you a really good look in. He was self-deprecating. He usually isn't self-deprecating with the meme comment. I thought it was outstanding.
Well done, Michael.
Mark Jean Greco coming up in about 15 minutes from right now. And tomorrow is a big day the Bears. What will we hear from the Bears? And will it be true? Whatever we hear, that's next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
So it's going to be a busy week in Indianapolis, not far from here, the Combine. Waddle was just going through the checklist.
A lot going on. Obviously, it is the opportunity for, I believe, all of the coaches and general managers meet the media. Press day will occur, I think, like at 9 o'clock tomorrow for Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. Bigger picture as well. Remember, the pass interference replay rule was put into effect for 1 year. So they've got to decide soon whether or not they're going to maintain the current policy, change it, get rid of it, whatever. The coaches want to talk about a sky judge, and the players and the owners will meet tomorrow as well in Indy. So there's a lot of football stuff going on.
The CBA-wise, they're meeting the players and the owners. Yeah, I think they got to keep the replay review of the pass interference. They need to look within as far as what they overturn and what they stay with. I mean, I feel like game to game, I felt like it got a little more easier to determine at the end of the year.
They were very reluctant to turn over to overturn calls on the field for probably the first half of the season.
And yeah, at least, right?
Then be, and I don't know if that was on purpose. Maybe that was a directive of the league that were saying, look, we want to condition the coaches to make sure that it's only done in obvious situations or perceived obvious situations. For whatever reason, it became more relaxed, and they overturned more calls as the year went on.
So, I mean, what should they look for? So should they look for it just to be clear and obvious, or should they look for, is it pass interference or not? Because aren't those two different things? If you look at a play and you say, okay, I've got the benefit of replay, is this, I think that's easier to define. Is this a violation of the rule,
right,
or is it not? But then it's very subjective as far as, well, is this clear and obvious? This is pass interference, but I don't know if it's clear and obvious.
I don't think they're, I think if they keep it as is, I think what they're going to do is interpret it that the play has to be dramatically changed because of it. So there may be some hand fighting, there may be some stuff going on, but unless there was something egregious, for the most part, we're going to let it go. That's the only way I think that they will keep the rule. Because you could call illegal contact on pretty much every pass route that's run. You got 5 yards to put your hand on somebody. At yard six, if you're still hand-checking a guy, that's technically a foul. But if it's not a material factor in the play, why are you going to throw the flag? You're not. So, I mean, it's a hard rule, I think, in a lot of ways to kind of rule on a consistent basis. I don't know what they're going to do. I thought it was wildly inconsistent. And I thought it was horrible for the first half of the season.
You know what a listener asked recently, and we never brought it to the air, and I've always wondered this too. Why, if you have a challenge left, can you not challenge in the last 2 minutes of the game? Do you know, like, when a team hurries to the line, the rules are you could challenge as long as it's within, it's outside of the last 2 minutes of the half,
right,
or the last 2 minutes of a game. If you have one timeout left and you have a challenge left, those are the criteria of a challenge. And there's a play that could make the biggest difference of a game with a minute left in the game. Why can't you throw the challenge flag then? Isn't that the time to throw the challenge flag?
But isn't anything inside of 2 minutes in each half already looked at?
Yeah, it's, I think, quote, looked at, but is it really looked at? I mean, that's the question. Like, do they look at it, or are they telling you, well, if we stop to look at it, we're not going to overturn it? You know, sometimes the offense will speed on the field, and they're looking to snap the play. And is that enough time for them to even look at it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why wouldn't you let a team use their, if they have a challenge left with a minute to go? I think it's sort of backwards.
They would only tell you that all things are going to be re... Yeah, I guess if what you're trying to do is speed things up, but aren't officials...
Yeah, they'll stop the play.
They're more apt to stop play in the final 2 minutes of the half or the game for that very reason.
Yeah, I think the belief is anything close gets looked at.
Yeah, right. We think. I just think, you know, who knows with this league, Jeff?
Look, that's fair, but... The rules are...
Didn't we just have a play in the playoffs where they refused to even look at it?
Well, are you talking about the Kyle Rudolph touchdown?
Yeah, they did look at it. And right. they said there wasn't enough evidence to overturn.
Right. They looked at it in the glance, but they never stopped for the actual review with the official. And maybe you say six of one, half dozen of another, but...
The official never explained it to the audience. Like, so the official never came out and said, we have looked at this play, and it has been ruled that there was no contact or this was not a flag.
You still lose, Saints fans. You still lose.
Right.
The guy in New York looked at it. We just, as viewers, did not get a response from the official on the field because the play was the final play of the game because it was an overtime.
Oh, so that guy did go look at it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant New York.
New York looked at it and sent down to the field that we're not overturning.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, I mean, listen.
That's what I mean. Like, why not put the official with the Microsoft thing and have a full discussion then? What's the point?
Well, but they're only talking, the ruling is still coming from New York.
I know, that's why it's weird.
Maybe what they do is they open it up for transparency the way that the XFL does, and you can get a better view of it.
I would love it. And then there's the local angle of, obviously, tomorrow we're going to play you all these highlights and be listening to ESPN 1000 all day. Listen a lot. Brand new ESPN Chicago app. I'm telling you guys, as far as technology is concerned,
even an idiot like me can use it.
It's so simple. Like, sometimes things get too cute. The reviews that I've gotten from listeners, and not often are listeners nearly united in this, is that it's easy and it's outstanding. So download the new ESPN Chicago app. It's the best way.
Real and spectacular.
To listen live and to also listen to all of your favorite shows, podcasts.
I'm not expecting anything surprising to come from either my coach or my general manager tomorrow.
Do you think, you heard me earlier, I spun it where Matt Nagy will not want to speak about the coaching changes. Do you think he'll be transparent in that regard and say, look, this is why I needed to be with more of my guys. All those guys were arranged and I felt like I needed guys
I think you will get some elaboration. I don't know how much. I don't think you'll get the blanket, we've moved on. I don't think that would be a good idea for them, and I don't think that's the approach. I don't know how much clarity they'll give you or detail, but I think what he'll do is he'll trumpet the how much he enjoys Juan Castillo and the relationship they've had in the past, and you know, also has a relationship with Flip and everybody else. So I think you'll get some conversation about it. I also think you'll get more of the same from the coach about the quarterback situation, or the general manager about the quarterback situation.
And you believe that Ryan Pace is telling you what he actually believes, not keeping things, well, I want to protect Mitch until I don't protect Mitch, and then I'll let everyone know, hey, we got a better quarterback.
Yes, because I truly believe that he's all in on Mitch. Now, I don't think they're going to trade a pick for David Carr. Derek Carr, rather. I don't think they're going to trade a pick for Andy Dalton. Both of those guys could be released. More likely Dalton would get released than Carr. I think you could still get something in return for Carr if the Raiders traded him. Anybody else that they would bring in my opinion, is going to be a backup to Mitch, at least until Mitch proves that he hasn't made any progress. So I don't think they're selling anybody any. You know, I don't think they're trying to keep it close to the vest.
Of the guys who are available, you've asked me this. Where is it cut off? Where is the cutoff point of this is no longer the guy who's just a safe backup to Mitch? Is it just what we know by the salary,
it's
like
Rivers,
Robert Mays told us?
It's Teddy Bridgewater. It's Rivers. It's Brady. It's
Cam Newton.
It's Carr. Maybe not Dalton, because if Dalton's released and you sign him and you give him a reasonable contract but not 16, 17, Dalton's probably the only one that would come here and have to compete. But I personally don't see that happening.
Hector in Harwood Heights, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Hector?
Hey guys. I wanted to know if the NFL was going to address at the end in the playoffs, like when the Titans were running out the clock, if they're going to address that. To see, so teams don't take advantage of that false start and then delay of game, et cetera.
Yeah, the loophole with more than 5 minutes left where you can, like, instead of punting and you're at midfield and if you lose a down or yardage, you could just run clock like the Titans and Patriots have done.
So you get to the 5 minute mark.
Right.
It was a rule that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Patriots first exploited.
Yes.
And then
Vrabel used it on his Darth Vader.
Yes.
Or his Luke Skywalker.
I just don't think, I mean, tactically, I think it's a good move, but it kind of.
Would you keep
waters,
it or would you.
Waters down the game.
Would you close out the loophole?
I would close the loophole because I'm looking for action.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
I'm with you on that. All right, Mark Jean Greco is up next. Is he angry at Stan Bowman for where the Hawks are these days? Also, his thoughts on Michael Jordan's speech. He's always very opinionated on Michael, and a lot of fun coming your way. Mark Jean Greco, Always Can't Miss Radio, brought to you Chicago by Chicago Cut, is next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Gene Greco is brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. He's with us each and every Monday, Wednesday,
and guess
Friday.
What? I was there last night.
Well, what'd you have?
I went with the crab avocado appetizer.
Ooh. Okay.
Then had the king salmon special with the cream spinach.
Ooh.
Threw in a little caprese there on the side. Finished it off with key lime pie.
Oh, that's a day right there.
And, of course, two filthy, dirty martinis.
That's it.
That was great.
Any wine with dinner?
No,
just the
two martinis
were fine.
I just do the two teenies. That's it. You know, I was in bed all day Friday, all day Saturday, going stir crazy. Had to get out. And that was the remedy for what was ailing.
Well done, sir.
Yeah.
Well,
I got to tell you, a Sunday night, go there on a Sunday night in January, February, or beginning of March. Low key, low lights. I'm in the corner at my table. I'm looking at the room.
Barry White's playing over the speakers.
It was tremendous. It was awesome.
That's awesome. That's good that you got a chance to enjoy a little.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, here's an advantage of living in a high rise. This was great. So I'm on the 58th floor of 62. That's why Tom will never come up to my place.
Never, because the heights scare me.
So, well, where do you draw the line? I mean,
yeah, right.
I mean, like 38 or something? Do you go into 20? You've been to the signature room. You're fine.
Oh, I can't stand even close to the glass.
And it's all glass,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I can't. I'm scared as hell of that.
The building right next to me is 57 stories. Ooh. So I clear that. I have a perfect view of the now 85-story building that's on the other side of that.
Okay.
So I get up. It's like 11 o'clock.
Does the building move a little bit when it's windy?
Yes, it does. My chandelier moves.
I'd puke all over my master bedroom if that happened.
So I get up. It's like 11 o'clock. It's Saturday night. I'm not feeling well. I'm just going to go to bed. And I stand up and I look. And on the 65th floor of this building 2 days away, this guy's got a mega flat screen, and I'm watching
porn.
The fight.
Oh.
I'm watching the fight on his flat screen.
Oh, really?
Two buildings away.
You could see what's going on.
I watched the whole first round. Fury comes out and takes it to Wilder. I couldn't believe it. And then, of course, I saw later highlights where not only does he whip Wilder, he has to lick the blood off his neck and shoulder.
Well, didn't you used to do in the scrums back in the day when you were covering the Bulls? Like you'd bloody up another sportscaster.
Oh, yeah.
We trip guys,
and
punch
then
guys.
Lick the blood off of their shirt.
Well, that's what Walter would do to us. While you'd be interviewing somebody else, he'd get you in that vice grip right on the back of your thigh, and you'd go down in 2 seconds. So
he was a big prankster, wasn't he?
A huge, huge prankster. So what'd you think of Michael today at the Kobe celebration?
I thought it was fantastic, and I thought it was something that has been overdue. It's his terms to begin with, but I liked, you know this, and I was talking to one of my good buddies who I went to high school with, and you covered all of Michael's career. Mm-hmm. Michael, when he's talking to the media, whether it's at a podium or after a practice, very politically correct and everything like that, and never, ever, ever is he the vulnerable guy.
True.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
He's very, you know, when, you're going to taunt him, he's going to use that as a motivator. So never is he ever vulnerable. This is the time, first time that I could remember that Michael showed people, hey, I'm human, I'm vulnerable, and this has really affected me, and I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah, well put. Absolutely. And, you know, on the heels of NBA All-Star Weekend, where he's in town and has a party, but he has no presence. He's not the main ambassador, as we all thought he should have been. He's a recluse, doesn't make a lot of appearances, doesn't speak, doesn't do interviews. He got up there and let it flow. I've never seen him cry that much. Made fun of himself, saying, there's another meme for you.
Right.
Because the other one was getting kind of old. And it was great.
I think he hit all the notes.
Yeah,
I mean,
he really did. And I tell you, I was surprised to see him speaking.
Yeah.
I was. But every time they went to Phil Jackson, he was asleep, it looked like. And, you know, of course, Magic did his thing. And it was like a mass. It was like a service.
I think today was, if Michael was going to choose one or the other, this was obviously the celebration of Kobe's life.
Yeah.
And a memorial to him and I thought if Michael was going to choose one or the other, that this was the one to choose. And I thought he did an excellent job.
Yeah, he really did. Speaking of crying, Saturday on the 40th anniversary, I watched Miracle again for the 50th time.
I watched it Friday night, too.
And I started crying again.
It holds. I was telling these guys in the break, and ESPN, I think, ran it last night. The actual anniversary was Saturday. We had Al Michaels on Friday. That's what I wanted to tell you during the break. He was outstanding, as always, telling us these stories. And like one of the good questions Waddle asked him about how he got the assignment. Like, no one wanted to do hockey. He told us that people wanted to do Eric Heiden, you know, the speed skater.
Yeah, Keith Jackson got that instead, and he was disappointed.
Nobody had ever called a game.
He'd only called one before.
He's the only one that called a game.
Yeah. That is such a magical moment, and it's outside of any Chicago sports moment, it's my favorite sports moment of my lifetime.
It was so enriching, and Kurt Russell just nailed Herb Brooks, and Al talked about that. The presentation Saturday night of the movie was Bob Costas interviewing Al Michaels between periods, before and after the game. That just enriched it even more. It was spectacular.
It was, you know what was weird for me was I was watching it, and I'm like, whoa, this movie's already 15 years old. This came out for the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, right.
That's how quickly it goes by.
What I was amazed at, you get all these players, all these actors who could play, and you had to choreograph the entire game exactly the way it went.
Right.
The goals, the plays, the passing, all the Russian players they got in to play the Soviet team. A lot of the actors played in college, and that was quality hockey, because usually, you know, like Youngblood, you know, movies like that,
right,
the guys can't skate.
Wildcats.
They hired actors who had hockey backgrounds to play the parts.
Yeah, the guy that played Jack O'Callaghan, who unfortunately committed suicide when he was just 35 years old, he played at the University of Maine. And a lot of the other guys played in college or played at least junior. So it was choreographed so well. And Al Michaels redid his play-by-play for the movie.
Yeah.
And it was so... Can you imagine how long that had to take and how that had to sync up?
They used the last call of the game against the Soviets, the 8 seconds, seven, do you believe in miracles? Yes.
Right.
That was the original. The rest of the play-by-play was redone for the movie.
And when they had Al Michaels and Ken Dryden on camera, it looked like they had dubbed in exactly what Al was saying just to make it match the rest. But, it's only us being in the business looking really closely at it. But...
You know what I did not remember from that game in 1980? So the Soviets are a huge favorite, and the U.S. then, they're protecting a one-goal lead. Do you remember the Soviets did not pull their goalie?
Yeah.
Down one, they didn't know what
Soviets
to do.
Soviets never pulled goalie.
Brooks was on the bench going, they don't know what they're doing.
I forgot about that.
Because Craig Patrick, the assistant, said, why haven't they pulled Mushkin?
Yeah.
And he's like, they don't know what they're doing.
Didn't Jim Craig also suffer somewhat of a head injury or something in the game?
Yes,
did he get hit?
He did, but it was great. ESPN Jeremy Schapp did a little roundtable with Jim Craig, Michael Ruzioni, and Mark
Johnson.
Sitting around watching the game again. That was another special on ABC and ESPN.
Yeah.
So I got my fill.
We talked to Al on Friday, who discussed all of that. And I found that because we had talked to him a little bit about that in the past at other times, he went into depth because he was in Nevada, in Vegas, talking about playing craps. And just the thrill and the exhilaration of holding the dice for 15, 20, 25 minutes. And when he's on a good run throwing the dice, how some people would scream at times, do you believe in miracles?
Yeah.
I enjoyed his conversation about his love for craps as much as anything we talked about.
It's going to live forever, and he said this many times, it was serendipitous. He didn't have it planned. It just came out perfectly.
Well, how could he have planned it? He had only done one hockey game prior.
He seized the moment. So... from miracle to the Blackhawks trade.
Oh yeah, do you want to save it for coming?
Sure.
I want you. Are you mad at? Just give us a little teaser. Are you mad at Bowman? Bowman. It's fire Bowman trending on Twitter right now. Blackhawks fans are angry. 3 straight years without making the postseason.
Look, I'm a bit upset as any Blackhawk fan, but in this case, what else could he do?
Yeah,
the rest of the league had him by the.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Special guest, are you on the line?
I'm on the line and I'm in need of steam room because I have no voice left from All-Star Weekend, my greatest imitation of my man, Charles Wade Barkley.
It sounds like Dikembe Mutombo. Who is this?
It's Wilbon.
Hey, Mike Wilbon, the Godfather.
What's happening? Happy, what's happening, birthday kid?
Hey, man, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We had a great time on Waddle and Civvy last week in Chicago. The Godfather, I call him the Godfather.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's very kind. I sound like the Godfather. I sound like Marlon Brando right now.
Good stuff from Charles and, of course, Ernie Johnson and Michael Wilbon last week.
Do they do that podcast in a towel? Just sitting there, getting the steam?
It's called the Steam Room. It's the TNT podcast.
I know that
podcast.
Barkley was getting a manicure and pedicure while they were doing
it. Yeah, I saw that video.
I'm just glad that the fact that we were mentioned in a steam room had something to do with what it did instead of something else.
Exactly.
That's all I care about.
You guys are actually big in steam rooms. You don't know that, though. A lot of Waddle and Sylvie talk going on.
How do you know?
Every steam room that I've ever been in,
really?
Waddle and Sylvie always come up.
Do you initiate the conversation? Really?
They're always like, hey, Meller, you work with Waddle and Sylvie, don't you?
Yeah, Jeffrey, you got the rat tail thing going in the steam room? You just roll up your towel, snap it, and then just take a big hunk of meat out of them.
It just depends on the room, I guess.
Our football coach, Johnny Barnes, used to go nuts.
You can't do that. You could really hurt someone
with
that.
He used to go nuts because we do that. You'd roll up your towel, and it'd be wet. And you just snap it.
You could split someone's skin.
Ooh.
Yeah.
This one got Chester LeBeds.
But we all did that, didn't we?
It's like a Chester LeBeds. He got like a three-quarter tear in his thigh.
Yeah.
It was like somebody took a square chunk out of his leg. So Johnny Barnes is just like, you took a big hunk of meat out of him. So it's 100 push-ups in gear.
How many stitches did he get?
A lot. A lot.
Well, what's a lot?
Well, like 50 inside, and then maybe 20
just
on the outside.
Rat. I was giving him
right down to the bone, almost.
Wow.
In his thigh.
Listen, I'm here to
it's a
to,
big hunk
to,
of meat.
To support the caution.
Don't do it.
But that seems a bit.
Here's what I want to know.
Did he have a blade on the end of his towel?
No, but you snap a wet rolled up towel. That just it's like a snake taking a bite out of your leg.
I get it, but you make it sound like he could have taken off the bottom part of his leg from the knee
down. Probably could have. Like a whip.
You know when you have the debates politically, at the end of the debate, the people tell you what's true and what's not really true.
Okay, I may have exaggerated the wound.
We need a Gene Greco detector for every story.
Yeah. Fact check.
Gene Greco tells, we need an authentic fact checker.
Well, that's a true story. Now,
to tell us if he just made that up for
the
radio.
Wound may have been exaggerated, but he did take stitches.
Oh, I get, yes, definitely. Yeah. I know that you can damage the skin and you can you can get a laceration.
There was our quarterback, Brian O'Keefe, who was known as Broken Arrow, but for another reason. So.
What, did he have something going in the wrong direction?
I think half of his stories are from movies.
They're from books.
They're from Porky's, they're from the old school movies of the 70s.
We just did this story on our newscast about Burger King has come out with
a new
sandwich.
Did you see the time when they had the tranquilizer gun and the guy accidentally shot him, Jimmy, in the neck? My buddy Jimmy, and he fell into a pool.
Oh,
and he was
this
is awesome. everything's a scene from a movie.
No, so Burger King has a new sandwich out. It's a bun with French fries in it, mayonnaise and ketchup.
Oh, gross.
That's it.
So the sandwich is the French fries portion. There's no meat, right?
There's no meat. It's a bun with French fries inside with mayonnaise and ketchup.
Yeah.
And that just, to me, that's 3 a.m. in college. You're hammered. That's what you make.
That's something that you make when you collect everything in your freezer and you're like, all right, I got no meat.
Plus,
I got a hamburger bun. I got some microwavable fries. I got some mayo.
Just jam everything together.
Yes, let's make a sandwich.
When I was in late high school, early college, doing a few things, we used to do the mixed surf and turf, and you would take a double cheeseburger, a fillet of fish, and you would take the fish part and the double cheeseburger, and then you put fries on it, and you would eat that.
Wow, that's a big time sandwich.
I remember having lunch with Dan Carcillo at the Palace, and he would always put his fries in his cheeseburger.
Yeah,
which a lot of people do that.
Is that a Pittsburgh thing?
It might be. And he was funny as he took his teeth out to eat.
Did he really?
Yes, that's an absolute true story.
How is he eating without teeth?
Using the side teeth and the bottom teeth. I don't know. You got
how many
a couple
times
of fries sticking out the front.
He took his tray and threw his garbage out and threw his teeth away with him.
Probably many times.
Like my kids have done that with retainers. It's like $200 a pop.
I know.
It's like, what makes you more angry than your kids losing retainers? There aren't many things.
That's true.
Phones.
That's very true.
That's
nowadays,
true.
Phones.
Yeah.
But if you mix mayonnaise with ketchup, isn't that Thousand Island dressing?
That's what they say.
Ugh.
I would never do
that's
that.
Disgusting.
Well, and they sell that now. the mayonnaise ketchup mix.
Oh, they do?
That's disgusting. At the store.
I'm not buying it.
No. All right, so what is your thought? Do you want Stan Bowman gone?
Look, I've been very critical of Stan like everybody else, but in this particular case, the NHL took advantage of him. There's no way he was going to come out on top in this trade. Robin Leonard wanted a lot of money, more than the Hawks were willing to pay as a free agent. Okay, Corey Crawford, also a free agent. He is going to command maybe $4 or $5 million.
He's making $6 now, right?
But, you know, he'll take a pay cut to stay. He's still, what, 7 or 8 years older than Leonard, but he's playing well. So they get a goalie in return in this trade in Malcolm Subban, P.K. Subban's brother, who definitely is a backup goaltender. This isn't like two good goaltenders. Subban, I think his number's like .890. Save percentage, not good. Giving up more than 3 goals a game, not really good. But at least they get a backup goaltender, a second-round pick, and then they get this prospect, a defenseman who's playing in college at Denver. And then, you know, Erik Gustafsson, he was a big disappointment. He's a specialist. He's an offensive defenseman who plays no defense at all. And the Hawks have the worst D in the league, practically. And so he's like a power play guy.
So isn't that the reason why you can't go ahead and break the bank for someone like Leonard as a goalie? Can't you, like you said, you bring back Corey Crawford at a reasonable rate? He's not going to make $6 million next year, no?
I'd say $4.5 or $5
million. Is it something they'd be willing to do?
$4 million. Okay, I think Corey, at his stage in his career, he'd be willing to do that and stay here. So he had nowhere to go with that. He gets a third-round pick from Calgary. What's that going to be? What's this prospect going to be from?
It's hard to get something in return for players that are going to be free agents.
Yeah, absolutely. So
that's what Bowman said. Bowman says our goal was to make sure we got a return for two guys that once you get past the deadline, their value drops dramatically. You have to try to get the best return you can. So I'm not hammering him for anything he did or didn't do today. I think Blackhawks fans, this last month has sort of been the, hey, let's refocus on what the hell has gone wrong here recently.
Right.
And why it's been 3 straight years without the postseason, why it's been since 15 since they won a playoff series, why it's been since 16 since they won a playoff game.
You can't sustain a lead. You can't come back from a deficit. They just run out of gas. They can't play 3 periods. It's unbelievable. And look, I think fans and members of the media who cover the Hawks on a day-to-day basis really would like to see a new GM, a new head coach, the Jeremy Colleton experiment. To me, not working, not an impactful guy, doesn't have a presence. I don't know how the players respond to him, but I think initially they're like, what are you kidding?
Okay, so like we always talk about the likelihood of change and real change for the Bulls. What is the likelihood of change and it being real change for the Blackhawks?
When your last name is Bowman, you know, that makes it real tough.
I understand. That's so weird to me. Joel Quenneville was the second winningest coach all time. It's not like
behind guess who?
You know, this isn't Scotty. This is Stan. You know, and this is the real Coach Q. Well, why does the name matter?
I don't know, but it does. And look, Stan's done a lot of good things. You know, you forget about the 3 cups. You know, it's one of those things. Everything clicked for him. He had the core, signed the core, had to spend a lot of money. But what he was good at for the 3 cups was the ancillary plug-in players around, the role players. You know, Antoine Vermette, who comes in for 20 minutes and gets a cup, you know.
Right.
So stuff like that. It all clicked for him. Well, the replacement parts that they're putting around the core now, the core is older, and these guys just weren't it, and they're not doing it. And we talk about Dominic Kubalik having this great, great rookie season. They get him for a 5th-round pick. Kings didn't want him. And everybody's like, wow, he's great. But I heard somebody talking about this earlier today. Might have been Boyle. I think it was. By the way, it's good to see Mr. Hanley.
They were very good today.
That was great. Talking about everything is relative. Kubalik looks great compared to everybody else on this team and where this team is. He'd be a 3rd or 4th liner on a really good team still.
Yeah. Marky, great to see you. Back on Wednesday unless you're out again?
No, I'm good on Wednesday now. Hey.
Good. Take your vitamins.
Just, you know.
Take your vitamins.
NyQuil, DayQuil, Dirty Martini. I'm good.
I would not suggest that to people. No. Just say that's what works for
you. Kids out there, don't do that. This is for an aging adult. Right. Okay.
We've got Eddie Olczyk next on the post-game show, so he'll break down the Hawks of the trade deadline. And then we've got Meller with Fred Huebner. That's a great combo at 7 o'clock.
Somebody described Huebner as an 80-year-old me, and I take that as a compliment.
Wow. You should.
I do. Like, get off my lawn again. Two guys saying get off my lawn.
Thanks, Eddie. You and Freddie should do a show.
Oh,
we
yeah.
Should.
Yeah.
Somebody's getting an ass kicking.
We wouldn't talk about anything that happened past 1980.
Thanks to Marky. Thank you to Jeff Miller and Adam Abdallah. For Mark and Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Monday night.
Fun stuff. That's fun stuff.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfort.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.